This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre, Straight Fire for Tuesday, October 19th. What a night in sports. Holy cow, Monday Night Football was phenomenal. We will get to the Titans' heart-stopping win over the Buffalo Bills. I don't understand how it's a controversial finish, but we'll talk about it momentarily. I do need to pump up our guest today. As you guys know, the NBA season tips off tonight. Lakers-Warriors, one of the marquee matchups. Yes, your boy will be in attendance. I don't know when I'll tape the pod. I don't know if I'll wake up in time on Wednesday morning or do a super-duper late-night pod. Either way, it's going to be fire tomorrow. But NBA season tips off. So as a result, we brought in a guy. I think it's our first guest, third time. By popular demand, Preston Johnson, a.k.a. Sports Cheetah. NBA, he's an NBA head big time. And he's into gambling, so I think you guys will like it. So definitely stick around for that. However, I got to start the pod with the bananas. 31-34 Bills loss to the Titans on the road. Bills were the better team, no doubt. The Buffalo Bills were the better side. Somehow, they kept screwing up in the fourth quarter, ended up getting stalled on fourth and one from the 3-yard line. And it was just an unbelievable end to a really hell of a game. If you listened to my picks, I gave them out on the Fox Sports column on Monday. Over 53.5, cha-ching, easy winner, I think in the third quarter. Cole Beasley, over 4.5 receptions, cha-ching. What's his name? Emmanuel Sanders, over, I think it was 54.5 yards, cha-ching. And the reasoning is sound. I'm not just throwing darts here. You can read about it on Fox Sports. Of course, I also tossed in, why not? I like the Bills. How did the Titans stop them? And of course, the Bills don't beat them. Although the Bills, they didn't quite lead wire to wire. They led much of the game. Tennessee was in the thick of things. And in the fourth quarter, Buffalo, it was just a tough one. You know, they run the kickback for a touchdown and is flagged for holding. The Bills only had, I believe, two punts in the game. One was in the fourth quarter. And this is what Tennessee does, these slow ball control drives. 5 minutes, 42 seconds, field goal. 4 minutes, 56 seconds, touchdown. And it's like when you're chewing up clock in the fourth quarter, it's really tough to beat these guys. Now, I will credit the Buffalo Bills. They did a great job stopping Derrick Henry. I know people don't want to hear it, and Henry won a bunch of fantasy matchups, and everybody's freaking out about this tweet that I put out. All these Tennessee fans, these homers, are coming after me. So Derrick Henry, 23 carries, 143 yards, 3 touchdowns. On the surface, amazing. 3 touchdowns. Come on. I'm not ripping him. He did have a 76-yard touchdown run early in the game, just early second quarter, just broke through 76 yards, gone. In the other 19 carries, Derrick Henry did virtually nothing. 67 yards, 19 carries, 3.5 yards per carry. I went through every Derrick, just because all these people were yelling at me, these buffoons in Tennessee, I went through and looked at the numbers. So 20 carries, he had a 76-yarder, obviously the touchdown, a 19-yard gallop, and a 13-yard touchdown run. The other 17 were small carries or negative yardage. The Buffalo Bills did a great job on him. They did. They didn't lose this game because of Derrick Henry. They lost because Josh Brown slipped on the turf on fourth and one from the 3-yard line. And the kid Simons, the young kid they got out of Mississippi State, got an incredible push. Allen, who's 6'5", probably leans forward 99 times out of 100 and gets a first down. He slips as he backs away from center and almost goes down immediately, and it's a stunner. And the Buffalo Bills go down. A team that, when you look at the schedule, it's lined up really, really well for Buffalo to get the number one seed. Now, all of a sudden, you look at the AFC standings and Buffalo's 4-2, and they now are trailing Baltimore, and they're right in the thick of things with the Chargers, yes, the Titans, the Bengals. The door's open for the Browns and the Steelers. We're not going to talk about them. Even the Colts to get back in it. The Raiders are 4-2. Yes, the Bills have the easiest schedule. Yes, they are going to win a lot of games. A lot. But I have absolutely no problem with them going for it on 4th-and-1 with 22 seconds left. Okay? You are the Buffalo Bills. You are the Super Bowl favorites. You're the best team in the league. You have a 6'5 quarterback. Of course you lean forward and get the first down, and then you call timeout, and then you go and get the touchdown. You win the game. You don't kick the field goal on 4th-and-1 and force overtime. Like, what's the point of that? You're inside the 5-yard line. You are the most dynamic offense in the league. You go and get the touchdown. How is this even a debate? And this goes to the divide of the old school folks and the new people who actually look at numbers and win probability and math, and they say, wait a sec. You're inside the 5. You have the best offense in the league. You have 4th-and-1. You have 2 timeouts. You win this game. You don't want to take chance. What happens when you kick the field goal, you lose a coin toss, and the Titans come down and score? Then what? Then who are you going to blame? You're going to blame the defense? You're going to blame the coin toss? It's like you play this game, and you want to blame everybody. Bottom line is the Bills did not execute on 4th-and-1. Josh Allen slipped. Game over. You lose. It's not the end of the world. Yes, temporarily, the AFC is kind of, sort of wide open. Kind of, sort of. And then you look at the schedule. Okay, next up for Buffalo. Oh, a rematch with Miami, which they already beat 35-0. I don't give a shit that Tua's playing. And by the way, that's in 2 weeks after a bye. Then you have the Jaguars and the Jets, who have a combined, let me see here, 2 wins. Then you have the Colts, then a trip to the Saints and the Patriots. And oh yeah, the Buffalo Bills are going to be favored in every single game until the Bucs meeting on December 12th. And it's not going to be a 3-point favorite in Jacksonville. You're probably looking at, they were favored by 6 in Tennessee. You're probably looking at 7.5 to 10 in Jacksonville. You're probably looking at 7.5 to 10 against the Jets. Okay? So the Buffalo Bills are still on track to get to the Super Bowl, win the damn thing. Let's not freak out about a 4th-down decision. People are losing their minds. Why didn't he? McDermott, such a smart coach. You kicked the field goal. What do you kick, a 22-yard field goal? Well, you go for it on 4th-down. You play to win the game. We kill these coaches who punt and make weak decisions like Mike Zimmer, who I just slaughtered on this podcast Monday, if you missed it. Mike Zimmer, the worst. He's literally playing for field goals, playing for punts. I'm going to ride my defense. Like, that's a 1997 mindset. You don't do that. That's how you lose football games. This was not overly aggressive. This was the right move by McDermott. Now, without further ado, let's get to today's guest and our NBA preview with Preston Johnson, a.k.a. the Sports Cheetah.
You know a guy. Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy. Knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire a guest you know well. I think he's the first guy to be on here 3 times. Broussard may have been on here 3 times, but his name is Preston Johnson, the legend, NFT guy, gambling guy, NBA, college football, NFL. He does it all. He's got his own studio now in Orange County. He's just blowing up everywhere. What's up, Preston?
I'm doing well, man. It's an honor. I didn't realize I'm up there with the Broussards of sort, but I'll take it. I appreciate
it. Yes. Well, I mean, when I think NBA now, like, you're up there, because I know you, you know, when we text and stuff, and I know you're a huge NBA honk, and I think you were the first one to put me onto Luka during his rookie year, but we'll get to Luka in a little bit. I wanted to preview the NBA season, not like one of these nerdy, like, who's going to win the title? Not like, you know, what our listeners care about, the storylines, gambling, okay. The ancient fossil Lakers, but where I want to start is there was a little viral video on Monday about Ben Simmons at practice, his first one with the Sixers since he said, trade me, I'm not showing up. And then they withheld the money. And he's got clearly his phone in his pocket and the screen is lit as he's turning around. And it's basically like, I don't really care to be here. And I'm fascinated by Ben Simmons. But there's also the Kyrie Irving subplot, which is unbelievably extraordinary. I'm curious where you as an NBA fan, which one of those two do you care more about?
I think as a fan, and when we talk fans between guys like us, like when I was growing up and I'd play NBA 2K or NBA Live back in the day, I'm a little older. I'm not too old yet, but I always played like GM mode. I loved running the franchise. A lot of it had to do with trading players and trying to build a roster. I'd simulate the games. I would hardly play them.
Yeah.
This is similar, I think, with Philadelphia's situation here and just knowing Daryl Morey to some extent and how analytically savvy he is. But also, like, he's not taking an L. Like, he just will not trade Ben Simmons for 25 cents on the dollar. He knows how detrimental that would be for the franchise. And so I think that's what we've kind of seen is it's played out long enough. Ben Simmons was tired of obviously not getting paid. He's back in practice trying to play. And I think Morey has to just bet on either Simmons tries hard because he knows that's the way to get traded. And a deal that Morey will actually consider from another club or another team, or Simmons is actually just great and somehow it works out. But the last thing that he could do, even if he's showing up with his phone on at practice, like he has to show up. And I think Morey knows he just can't trade him for like Malcolm Brogdon. Like it just, you just can't do that. And some of the offers, and you hear like, oh, maybe Damian Lillard, like there's just no way Blazers are doing that either. So to get to that point though, where maybe Lillard's on the table or Bradley Beal, a player of that caliber, they needed to figure it out. And Simmons just has to go and practice and eventually play the games. I hope they can, because it'll be fun to have another player there with Embiid in the Sixers roster in the East that, you know, is impactful on the offensive side. That's what they need most.
Yes, people. I keep people hearing them say that, oh, even without Ben Simmons, Sixers are in great shape. And I'm just thinking, like, really? I mean, Joel Embiid misses like 15, 20 games every year. If anything, I would look at the Sixers under right now, because I don't think the Simmons thing's going to work.
I'm with you. And obviously, he's going to try to play, and we'll see. But I think people, like, a positive expectation for Embiid, like, if he played 70 games, we would be thrilled. And that's an underdog, right? Like it's probably in the 60 to 65 range on average. And plenty of times he only plays half the year. And so when we're going through this, you look at the rest of their schedule, like they brought in Andre Drummond, like really?
Come on.
I know Seth Curry's been great. Matisse Thybulle's great defender, but they're banking a lot on Tyrese Maxey.
Way too much on Tyrese Maxey. He had like three good games last year, right? Maybe three good weeks. I don't know.
And I know they have Tobias Harris still, but like, let's be honest, relative to salary, I know he gets thrown under the bus a lot, but he's fine, but he's not going to lead the team when it's no Ben Simmons potentially and no Embiid because Embiid's out. So I'm with you. I wish I wasn't because I love Daryl and I just love what he did for the game of basketball on that aspect with the Houston Rockets, but he's not selling Simmons for cheap. No. And so at least for now, I think that he is going to play. I wouldn't bet under just to be straight. If you made me, I would, but I'm not going to play this.
Oh, you wouldn't? Okay, got it, got it. So where are you on the Kyrie stuff? He's officially been ruled out, shocker, for the opener. I actually took the opportunity to bet James Harden to win the MVP at 25-1. We forget, like, Kevin Durant doesn't play all the games. He played a lot in the playoffs, but in the regular season last year, no. And I mean, Grant Hill was on here last week, and he thinks that Kyrie will be playing in about a month. Either the restrictions will get loosened or something will happen. So with that, I didn't feel great about my Harden bet, but James Harden, people forget, like, you know, he was hurt in the postseason. This guy was carrying Houston for years, right?
Well, he carried the Nets. People also forget last year when KD and Kyrie were out, and the Nets were still humming. Like, it was no problem. And a lot of that has to do with Harden, and you can just build around him because he's so impactful. It's interesting. If Kyrie, even if he came back, let's say, in a month, and Grant Hill's right, there's also going to be the games he misses because Kyrie also gets hurt pretty frequently, or at least decides to go to his sister's thing and he's out for the week. Like, it just happens. So there's going to be other stuff. Like, sure, he misses the first month. Best case is he probably misses another month's worth of games too, just regardless. And so I don't hate it. I also heard at one point last week you could get Harden to lead the league in scoring at like 50 or 60 to one range, which is similarly intriguing if Durant's not playing a ton of games. And let's say Kyrie's out. Now it's like Harden needs to drop 40 a game for the Nets to win.
Right.
And so I think similarly to MVP, people are kind of forgetting Harden. And the real question is, and I'll throw this back at you, are you concerned that the sentiment after Harden kind of pushed his way out of Houston, he's already won MVPs, like that left a bad taste, I think, in a lot of like the voters' mouths.
Oh.
But did he resurrect that vibe yet, like last year with what he did with the Nets? Because when he
that's
got there,
good point.
It was good. So that's my worry, I guess, for an MVP vote.
Hmm. That's a tough one. I hadn't even thought about leading the league in scoring. Somebody texted me, what about Michael Porter Jr.? And I know you're a big Michael Porter Jr. fan. And I thought, like, well, no way. But, you know, speaking of voters, they just gave it to Jokic. Are they giving another Nuggets player MVP? Come on.
For MVP, I was thinking scoring, yeah. MPJ's
scoring, yeah, scoring,
MVP.
Yeah. No, no shot. My bad. Scoring. I confused scoring with MVP. But, you know, I know the voters do like the Nuggets. But, I mean, is he going to take over scoring with Murray out and Jokic still being the fulcrum of that offense?
This is what's interesting to me. And his whole back thing, the reason why he dropped, for people that aren't aware, for some context, he plays at Missouri, like the number one recruit coming out of high school or one of the top ones. He plays like a game, if that, because his back. And he doesn't play again for like 2 years. He fell in the draft when he would have been a top three pick to Denver in the middle of the first round. He shot 44% from three in his first two seasons in the league, 45% last year. his down year was like 41% as a rookie. Obviously, Jokic just finds the guy wide open, but he has a skill set that there's a ceiling as far as getting to the free throw line, attacking the rim, hitting mid-range and more one-on-one ISO now that no Jamal Murray for a while. I don't hate it. Whoever texted you,
really?
They're at least thinking in a process in a way that is on the right track as weird stuff happens. What happens if Jokic is out, who's usually pretty durable, surprisingly, for us big guys? But like, what if Jokic misses 2 months? MPJ has to drop 35 a game.
Well, what about Aaron Gordon? No, I like Aaron Gordon, but he's not a scorer. Yeah. All right, let's quickly move on to the Milwaukee Bucks real quick. They won the title last year. It's like people forgot they won the championship. And I was looking at their path. Okay, they take down the Heat, who I and a bunch of others forgot how gassed the Heat were after the bubble run. Sweep them. They beat Brooklyn after the injuries and, you know, KD's 2-inch three-point shot. They take down the Hawks after Trae Young missed the pivotal game. And then they don't even have to go through the Clippers or Lakers. I don't want to diminish the title, but I just did. Any shot the Bucks repeat, Preston?
I think it's okay to diminish it and still, like, they earned it. They deserve it. Same with the Lakers and the bubble win. I know, even as a Lakers fan, like, they beat the Miami Heat in the finals. They missed the Kawhi Clippers somehow. Like, it's okay to be diminished. And so you want to give them credit.
But wait, hold on. Kawhi played, though. Kawhi and the Clippers played. They just gagged.
Right, I'm just saying they didn't have to play them. Right. They got Denver, and Denver just wasn't nearly as good.
More diminished title, Raptors or Bucks?
Raptors.
Mm, yes, because KD went down. And nobody on planet Earth.
And so did Clay.
Clay, like, that's right. I forgot about
anyways,
Clay, yes.
In that game. And I'm pretty sure there was an injury on the East when they played the Sixers potentially too, that went to seven anyway, and Kawhi hit the shot. I don't think it was Butler, but I feel like so.
Oh no, they just they just won game seven over the Sixers when the Sixers just collapsed and choked.
Yeah, it's close. So I mean, I think so. Here's the thing: you don't want to diminish what Milwaukee's done, but I'll say this, and for like narrative media speak, eye test, you're like, man, something. The switch flipped for Giannis in the finals against Aiden after two games. Okay. It's like, okay. Maybe, like he just finally said, I'm going to the hole every time, you can't stop me. He stopped shooting threes. Have you seen him in shooting in the preseason?
Yes,
have you seen his videos going around? I am the last person that will admit, now maybe Giannis will hit jumpers. Now he's going to hit threes. The hitch is gone. But watch the damn videos. The hitch is pretty much gone.
Yeah.
I don't know what he did since the finals. He's been just trying, repetition, but it's less fidgety. Maybe his shot is going to be better. And if that's the case, and he also has that same mentality of like, no one can stop me, there's a ceiling that's higher for the Bucks than was there last year. And so like, really, are you going to miss PJ Tucker? Maybe a little, but who knows with the type of veterans they could bring in over the course of the season for minimum contracts or whatever buyouts come playoff time. I think that's an over. I thought, like, look, Mike Budenholzer team's dating back to the Atlanta Hawks. Win 60 games just because his scheme is so good game to game throughout the course of the season. The Bucks win total sitting still 53.5, 54.5 at the books. Like, I think they're at least a 56 win team. So that's one that I do like over. And I think there's a level Giannis might take his game that we just aren't ready for.
That's a little scary. And when you look further in the East, like the Sixers, no Simmons, the Brooklyn Nets right now, no Kyrie. Miami's got some new pieces. I like Miami a lot, but I don't know. Where are you on Miami?
They're not suited to win a bunch of games in the regular season. They want to be healthy with Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry and everyone else. They have a great cook. Spoelstra is one of the best. It's the reason they did make that bubble run. Mm-hmm. If they're healthy in the playoffs, I think they're a team I would not be betting their season win total over 48.5, whatever the number is. Wouldn't be betting them at like plus 100 to win the division. Would absolutely be fine if you want to take 13-1 to win the East. It's kind of one of like their ceilings way higher. And I think that's kind of what they're playing for. Like Lowry and Butler aren't playing like load management. Yeah. Not coast, but load management over the course of the season. They have enough pieces to win enough games. They'll be in the mix. They know they've beaten the Bucks before. Like, they just want to make sure they're healthy in the playoffs. So I think a shot on them to win the East is kind of more of a ceiling play versus like they're going to win 50-plus games. I just think that'll be a lot tougher.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
It's almost like we've forgotten the Boston Celtics. They've fallen through the cracks.
They weren't very good last year.
I know. That's a problem. I don't know what happened. Like, honestly, Jason Tatum, I do not like anything Boston-related sports-wise, but I love Jason Tatum. I think he's one of the 5 or 10 best players in the league. I'm just enamored. Problem is, I don't know where the rest of, like, is the roster? that good. It almost feels like they're Portland light, where Portland built around a backcourt and the Celtics are building around two wings.
And imagine if like the Kyrie thing had worked out for them, or if the Kemba Walker thing had worked out, or if the Gordon Hayward thing had worked out. Like they just missed on like they had these young guys in Tatum and Brown that were great 3-and-D wings. And obviously Tatum and Brown both elevated their games to even being past considered 3-and-D. That's disrespectful to even say 3-and-D, to be honest. They're way better than that. But if any of their big acquisitions had worked or not been hurt, it just like they were so close anyways, right, in the Eastern Conference Finals twice, right? Anyways, so it's the last year, meaning last season, was a little weird to me. And I'm not sure if, and again, they got rid of Brad Stevens. He's still in the manager role now, which I'm not sure how that's going to roll, but they got a new coach. Like, I think maybe the refresh button helps, and they just need someone else kind of dictating things. They bring in Dennis Schroeder for a relatively decent contract, Al Horford again, Marcus Smart still there. They bring in Josh Richardson. Like, they're guys that, for whatever Josh it's worth, Richardson. Might be okay, but it's nothing that, like, I don't think you can really consider them a contender. If they had that third guy, which they tried three times, and it just didn't work out. So they're just a little behind everyone else, I think, in the East.
All right, one over, I bet, in the East. Feel free to scoff at me. Call me a square. The Chicago Bulls, I'm all in. Caruso, Lonzo, they'll be better defensively. I'm buying all the Patrick Williams stock. Love his game. I know you don't like the Bulls. I can see you wincing in the Zoom.
I'll take it. All right.
So really?
I love Caruso. You know, I'm a Lakers.
Yes,
homer.
Of course. Yes.
I love Lonzo because I stand for all the young guys the Lakers drafted that all turned out to be pretty good. Like even Clarkson days now, sixth man, Julius Randle.
Yeah. Okay.
Like they have all like Brandon Ingram and Lonzo. I have to just stand for all of them. But I thought this was really interesting. I'm going to get a little bit analytical, but I think people will be able to follow along.
Get a lot analytical.
And it's important because generally you would think preseason basketball doesn't matter. But someone, Kostya Medvedovsky, he's an NBA analytics guy on Twitter, if you don't follow him.
What's his handle?
At KMEDVED.
Okay.
All right. I can text it to you later, but people can listen back that are following along in the podcast. But he said, I've looked at the predictive power of preseason results before, and there's actually a lot of value here. And he's quote tweeting Steph No, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in just a second. He's like, I'll do a write up. But, and this at the time, the Bulls had a preseason net rating of +32.5. They were 32.5 points per 100 possessions better than their opponents. Dating back to the 15 years of data that we have on preseason, it was the best in the history of the preseason. Okay. All the other teams that are in that top, he said, that were 17.5 net rating positive or higher, all won at least 44 games, which the Bulls win totals like 42.5, 43.5. They all won between 44 and 59. He says, a +32.5 preseason net rating suggests we should bump our expectation for the Bulls' regular season projections by about 1.5 points per 100, which you saw most books went from 42.5 to 43.5 after the Bulls' first three preseason games. So the market agreed, like, hey, there might be something here with the Bulls, not only because you're bringing in defenders like, and Lonzo's just a good all-around player to just like, I'd love to play pickup with Lonzo. He'll just find you if you're open. Like, it's just so fun to play with the guy. And now he apparently can shoot 40% from three.
Wow,
Caruso's very similar.
One season.
And everyone's like, oh, they spent money on DeRozan. Look, DeRozan had one of his best career years, similar to Tobias Harris, gets a bad reputation because of his contract. He had one of his best seasons ever last year. And if LaVine still has like the keys to the car, but DeRozan's kind of a sidekick now, and they have a full healthy season with Nikola Vucevic, who was absolutely a better stretch five center than anyone they've had. I'm worried about the depth after Williams. You like Kobe White. There's maybe one or two more guys, but like it's pretty thin. But theoretically, they're starting like 5 and 7 or 8 deep. Is really strong. I'm with you. And it's like, I wince because it seems high for the Bulls, but LaVine took a major leap last year. I think he should have been most improved player. He didn't get it because he was already pretty good, but the leap he made to all-star and, you know, top 10 in the MVP voting.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm with you, man. And there's some stats in the preseason to back it up, which normally everyone always says disregard preseason. It's not necessarily true.
I am all over Zach LaVine. That guy's game is so awesome. I mean, this is irrelevant, and I don't want to go off on a tangent, but if he plays in, like, the 60s and 70s, what does he average, like 35, 40 a game? Like, the guy's game is, like, he's so fast and athletic and can splash threes. Like, I love Zach LaVine. Anyways, all right, so now I want to get to Luka. And I took a lot of heat when I won an undisputed in the offseason and said, you know, Luka's the best player in the NBA. And all these people are, you're an idiot. Stop being a moron. And, you know, you throw the stats at them and they just want to disregard them and say, well, who's he beating in the playoffs?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, well, he actually was an underdog against the Clippers both times and pushed him to seven. And people don't want to hear that. This is what, year four for Luka? I think they got a new coach. Is there pressure for him to finally get out of the first round here? Or are we just like, hey, man, he's like 22 years old. Could we relax?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar with like LeBron. And who did LeBron beat, you know, his second year in the league? I don't know. Like, you have to, at least it's all relative.
But now you're comparing Luka to LeBron and people are going to get angry.
I mean, you know this. I've showed you the clip. I was on ESPN like 2 seasons ago. And I said I would be shocked if it wasn't LeBron 1A, Michael Jordan 1B, and then Luka 1C, like in 20 years at the end of the day. I think he's going to be that good. His numbers are going to be actually better, if not at least versus Jordan, just because there's so many more possessions now in this era. Yeah. And the offensive ratings are so much higher and his usage rate's so high and he'll get the assists. Like he'll be in the mix. It just comes down to, can he win enough titles? And look, for what I would say back to those people, they're like, well, who has he beat? One, dude, the kid, he's so young still. But two, his second best player is Tim Hardaway Jr. Oh, and they still took the Clippers to 7 games.
Yeah.
And the year before, when Kawhi and the Clippers were massive favorites with the Lakers to be the two that won the title in the bubble, they took the Clippers to six.
Six, that's right.
And, like, and Tim Hardaway Jr. is Luka's second best player. And Porzingis, who's supposed to be that second best player, if you actually look at the numbers, he's been like a net negative. They've been a lot better when he's off the floor, and it's like Dwight Powell. That just like puts it into perspective. They don't have a roster yet this year, I think, that puts him over the top or anything. But to discount what Luka's done because he just hasn't beaten anyone in the playoffs is just like ignoring the context of who he's playing with, for one. My question to you, I'm going to throw this back at you. I think Rick Carlisle is one of the greatest coaches we've seen. Mm. Now it's Jason Kidd, who, probably not a coincidence, as soon as he left Milwaukee, they started winning a bunch of games and ultimately a title. I would be bullish Dallas because, by the way, they still went over their total last year, despite Luka showing up out of shape the first month, KP not playing most of the season. And then when he did play, he stunk. And they had a whole COVID thing for like 3 weeks the whole team, where like 9 of their players were missing sporadically. And they still went over their total last year. But I can't get over the fact that it's Carlisle to Jason Kidd. I just can't do it. So I'm staying away. That might be like a 4-win difference right there. It's just hard to say.
What about the offseason turmoil with the whole the GM stuff, the Harlebob, who's now out of there? By the way, you guys are friendly, right?
No. I mean, I know who he is because of the sports betting background, but we've never met or anything.
I thought because he's a big gambler and you are, and then the poker and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with him, but he probably knows who I am just on the outside. But never spoken to him before.
Interesting.
But respect what he did. And I really don't know. There was like, I think more of the drama was with like, personally, is like the Don Nelson just trying to stir stuff up to save his job. And like, stuff was getting spread around. And in the end, though, I also think Luka wanted to have a voice, that he wanted to be the head. And at some point, when you have a generational talent like that, you just have to say yes to Luka. You don't care if it's Carlisle. You don't care if you Vulgaris is one of like the, you know, big brains behind a lot of the analytics and decision making. You just have to move on and say, all right, Luka, who's the guy? And if it's Jason Kidd, all right, Jason's the guy now. And Jason, you see what happens, because Luka just kind of determines it all. It's the whole the player era that we're in today.
Yeah, they're gonna roll over for him. We haven't mentioned Zion at all. I'm a little sad to even talk about him now. Another surgery, not even starting the season. What the hell are you hearing on Zion?
And this one came out of nowhere. I didn't know he did even needed a foot surgery. And all of a sudden it's like, well, he had surgery. It went smoothly and we'll reassess in 3 weeks. It was like, wait, what? Like one of the brightest young stars in the league just had a foot surgery casually. And like, let's be honest, he hasn't been in the best shape before coming into the league. And that's, you have a big guy. That's what he does. Who relies on his athleticism around the rim. You're not necessarily thrilled about a foot surgery. It's going to take a while. By the way, have you looked at the Pelicans? Look, 39.5 before, even if Zion was playing most of the year, 39.5 is, I think, a little bit too high. And now you have Zion out for who knows how long. Look, and Ingram, look, I'll stand for all the Lakers guys.
Come on.
He's even when he was with LeBron, they couldn't win games. The guy's never won games.
Yeah. Who's their second best player with Zion out and Ingram as their one?
It's Jonas Valanciunas, who they traded Adams for from Memphis. And I actually like Valanciunas. But then you go after that, and it's like they're relying on Nikhil Alexander-Walker. Kyle Lewis Jr. from last year. Like, you like him, but really,
do you play fantasy?
But of course, I actually have him. The one league I'm in for NBA, he's on my team. So I there's like upside there. But they brought in Devontae Graham. Like, these are guys, they're not winning you in the West half of your games.
Yeah,
they're fine pieces, but they're like losing Lonzo, I think, is a pretty big deal. And even obviously Drew Holiday from the year before that, like, they've downgraded in a lot of areas. And now if Zion's out, who was by far their most impactful player a year ago, it's just, it's really tough, I think, for New Orleans to get to 40 wins.
All right. So we'll wrap up with the Clippers and Lakers. First, Clippers, you know, everybody's just discounting them. No Kawhi Leonard. I kind of am too. I don't know how there's a case that they can do any damage. Paul George is a number one like 7 years ago, sure, in Indiana in the East. But now in the West, I don't know.
Even as a number two, it's like, if Paul George is your number three, you're great. But number two is still questionable. Here's, do you know the Reggie Jackson stats, points per possession from last year? Have you heard these yet?
In the postseason or?
Regular season.
No, I don't.
So in the regular season last year, and we started bringing it up during the postseason, and then he kept crushing in the postseason too. The player that had the highest points per possession generated in isolation one-on-one scenarios with like a minimum amount of possessions. So say it was 100 or more, you know, there's X amount of players that had 100 opportunities. He was literally number one in the NBA. It was like 1.2 something points per possession. It includes, now generated means times that he kicks it out and gets an assist. So it's assist plus points scored essentially every time you're in isolation. And the numbers come from like Synergy, if I recall. So he was number one in the league. And then it's like, literally you could name the next nine because they're the nine guys you would think. But number one was Reggie Jackson.
Kevin Durant. What is that all about?
Durant was two, Steph's three, LeBron. Like, it's all those. LaVine might have been like 9 or 10. Like, he snuck in there because he had such a great year. But then in the playoffs, he basically did it again. And like, he was fantastic. They bring him back. Part of me wants to believe that there's some sort of like, oh, we're overlooking the Clippers. Like, if Reggie Jackson is your second best player in the West, it's just like, they're not winning anything. Yeah. Maybe they win enough games to go over your 44.5. It's possible, but I'm just staying clear. And like, look, Kawhi's still one of the best players in the NBA.
Was Reggie Jackson playing for a contract?
Yeah, they had to re-sign him. They had to bring him back this year. So,
but still, I mean, I could see a bump, but number one in the NBA, that's
literally, it was unreal. He just was on. Now, part of it, if you remember, the Clippers had like one of the best 3-point shooting seasons of all
time.
They
did, yeah.
And so Reggie Jackson just had guys standing in the corner that were hitting a bunch of threes. That was part of the reason it was so high. If you looked at just the times he scored, it wasn't number one, but it's combined, right? So when he's going off the dribble, he's finding the guys open or he's scoring. And it was literally that. There's no one better last year in the league.
What's the fall off from Kawhi Leonard defensively to Luke Kennard defensively? I don't think he's starting at the three, but he might start at the two. Paul George at the three? I don't know. Or is that a reach?
I think it's interesting. Like, Terrence Mann kind of had a few games.
Oh, yeah, he's nice.
Like, he's probably the better option of like a defender to start your lineup with, not Luke Kennard. Kennard's going to be a better sixth man option. Technically, they have Eric Bledsoe there, I think, back. So I don't know. I don't even know what the Serge Ibaka situation is. I know he was hurt to end last year. I'm not sure if he's even healthy to start. Marcus Morris and like Nicholas Batum had two of like the craziest comeback seasons we'll ever see. Like,
it's not duplicate.
There's probably, I just think the Reggie Jackson, Marcus Morris, Batum, like, it's kind of that duplicating that. It's not sustainable. And so there's regression there. No Kawhi. Don't try to get cute and say the Clippers have a chance. They really don't.
And we'll wrap up with the Lakers because everybody wanted to wait 25 minutes to hear what you have to say about the fossils. LeBron, Westbrook, a lot of guys hurt already. Anthony Davis coming off the injury. Where are you on the Lakers?
I think it could be an utter disaster. At least to start. I think it might be worse than, again, you don't want to put a ton of stock into preseason, but there's some valid numbers that come out of the preseason, especially the two games that LeBron comes in and says, all right, we're playing these ones like for real so I can get into playing shape again and in the mix. And look, Russell Westbrook's points per possession in the preseason was, I believe the number was 0.29. Like, the NBA average is like over one. He was 0.29. He just turned it over or missed almost every time he had the ball. You would say, hey, look, Anthony Davis, LeBron, Russell Westbrook, that's not a really good fit. It doesn't really make sense. And I would say, you're probably right. This is weird. But if they play AD at the five and they bring in two wings and shooters, which they tried, right? They brought in Malik Monk. They have Bazemore. Now they have THT, Taylor Horton Tucker. But now these guys are all hurt and they just signed Avery Bradley. Monday to bring him on to at least help with this wing scenario. They still have Rondo on the roster, but like if you had said, okay, two rosters, like they'll have some shooters there. All right, like Trevor Ariza, another guy that's injured, it's a wing that they brought in to maybe be a 3-and-D guy. I'd say, okay, they're starting DeAndre Jordan at center.
Oh, God.
And Davis is playing the four, LeBron the three, and Russell Westbrook the one. Who's shooting? And all the other guys are hurt other than Kent Bazemore. And then they bring in Bradley. Like, Kent Bazemore is your best shooter on the floor.
Malik Monk.
I don't, Monk's hurt. And Kendrick Nunn's hurt. That's another guy they brought in to
be. You know, you don't usually get fired up, but you are animated right
I'm
now.
So, it sounds I'm like so you're upset. Like, trying to believe, and I just can't, especially with all of the spacing issues. And in the year 2021 in the NBA, if you can't shoot threes, it doesn't matter if you're LeBron and Anthony Davis. It just doesn't matter. And the fact that there were reports 6 weeks ago that Davis would start at the five and that they were going to open things up and Davis finally agreed to it pisses me off that in every preseason game, it was DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah. Like,
okay, so that's not going to happen. Good luck trying to score. I already know guys bet under 228.5, bet the Warriors plus 3.5 for the game here Tuesday night. Like, I'm bearish. I think under 52.5 wins.
That's great very bet. Bearish.
If they figure it out, it's like in January. Like, this is going to take some time. So,
it's, I think which is good. Ahead. Yeah. Are you going to be going to many games this year? Probably not.
I don't tend to go to a ton because I've been in Las Vegas until just last year.
That's right. Yeah. We got to get
like
that on court.
So I was staying away, but I think now I'll probably need to get a few games.
Yeah. The on court before games, you know, you'll have to wear a mask.
You got a nice little in there. So we'll have to figure it
yes,
out.
Yes.
I don't have credentials anymore myself. So we'll have to find a back door.
Yeah, I think you'll be all right. All right. He's Preston Johnson, AKA the Sports Cheetah. Thanks a lot, man.
Yep. No problem.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live. The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
Preston Johnson, everyone. Just so full of good NBA nuggets. I'm glad that he's with me on the Bulls. I don't have a ton of NBA futures bets, but the Bulls over is one of them. The problem is, and I'm going to make predictions here for the NBA season right now on the pod. I'm not going full out predictions. I'll put those on maybe social media later today. But the problem is injuries. In the 82-game season, injuries happen so much that these win totals can hinge if someone's out 2 weeks, 3 weeks, any injury of significance, and win totals are shot. So it's tough for me to pot commit this early, big bets, or even half unit wagers on some of these futures. That being said, if you're asking me right now, who do I like to win the championship? I have to get a little chalky with it. And I've got to go with the Brooklyn Nets in the East, plus 240. The favorites, slight favorites over the Bucks, who are plus 812. And, you know, actually, those are the two. Those are the only two really low. Miami Heat plus 2,200. I would take a gander on them. That being said, they're a little older. So as Preston articulated, like they're not going to be great in the regular season. You can probably, when they are, you know, I don't know, 23-15 or something, probably get them at lower than plus 2,200, better odds. But I would take the Nets. I mean, how can you bet against Harden and Durant? As long as they're healthy, I don't even care about Kyrie. Harden and Durant healthy, they're way better than the Bucks. They were destroying the Bucks in that series with Kyrie and Kevin Durant and James Harden. They were destroying the Bucks. It was 2-0. It looked like it was going to be a sweep. And then the injury happened to Kyrie, and Harden wasn't 100%, and bing, bang, boom. In the West, and I know, Preston made great points that this Lakers experiment could be an utter disaster. As such, I do think they'll figure it out. And as long as LeBron and AD are healthy, they've got to be the team to beat in the West. There's no denying that. With Kawhi hurt and unlikely to play, and Jamal Murray out probably the entire regular season. They're saying he's a chance he could come back for the final month. The Lakers are definitely going to be the best team in the West. There's no denying that. However, 7-game series, weird things happen. I just don't see who the team is to take them down. If you give me healthy Lakers, healthy Suns, I'll tell you Lakers in 5 or 6. You give me healthy Lakers, healthy Nuggets, healthy anybody. Like, I've got to go with the Lakers. Utah Jazz, really? They scare you? They couldn't take down the Clippers when Kawhi got hurt. Like, I mean, I like Rudy Gobert and Mitchell as much as anybody, but come on. So it's got to be Lakers Nets. I know that's ultra chalky. I do think the Lakers will struggle early, as Preston said, and I think you'll be able to get them at way better than +369, maybe +500. Could they drop that low? I don't know. We'll see. MVP is where it gets kind of interesting. And I don't know if there's going to be one of these situations where, like, LeBron tries to play the season so he could be an MVP at 37 and be the oldest MVP. Although, actually, no, Karl Malone might have been an older MVP. I'll have to double check that. I personally would go with Luka Doncic, who is the favorite. And I know that, Jason, you're getting super chalky. Well, what am I going to say? I mean, I do have some money on Harden when he was +25 to 1. He's way down now to 14, 15 to 1. I mean, I love Jason Tatum. I don't think are the Celtics going to be top three in the East? I don't see that happening. Zion's probably not going to play enough. KD's always hurt. Embiid's always hurt. I don't think Curry's Warriors are going to be as good as everybody thinks. And you know I'm a Warriors fan. So I would go with Luka Doncic. Rookie of the Year is the interesting one. I thought all along I would take Jalen Green first over Cade Cunningham. And I will put my money on Jalen Green to win the Rookie of the Year. I just think Cade Cunningham's Pistons are going to be awful. Houston, despite being super young, they will be bad as well, but they will be exciting. And Jalen Green's probably going to have more 30-point nights than you think. He's going to put up, I don't know if he'll put up numbers like the kid Anthony Edwards did. He was just a scoring machine, but I'm just telling you, Jalen Green is going to get buckets and surprise some people, and I will guarantee you, by Thanksgiving or Christmas, we're going to be saying, man, how did they not take Jalen Green number one? The kid is electrifying. Now, is he a guy that you can build a franchise around? Can he do everything that Cunningham could do? Probably not. Probably not now, for sure. We've seen Cunningham do it in college. Jalen Green in the G League was a scorer, not as much of a facilitator as Cunningham. So I'll go Jalen Green, Rookie of the Year, but the guy to watch, and I don't know how you can't get excited, is Davion Mitchell in Sacramento. If there is a world where the Kings surprise everybody and get the 7 seed, it's not a world any of us have ever seen, but Davion Mitchell, the kid with the best nickname in the NBA, he's nicknamed Off Night because he's such a good defender that he guards the opposing team's best player, and that guy always has a bad game. And he says, oh, I had an off night. Actually, no. Davion Mitchell was in your jersey. So those are some of my NBA predictions. I'm sure someone will snip this off, throw it in my face in a month or two or three and say, oh, Jason, you were so off. Listen, that's part of the game. We make predictions. You hit some, you lose some. And I'll wrap on this for the Tennessee Titans fans. I went into the season like anybody who's looked at the numbers and said, oh, there's no way Derrick Henry has a good season. There's just no way. History says players who carry the ball X amount of times and have this kind of workload, they do not hold up. That's what history has said in NFL running backs for the last 40 years. Derrick Henry is shattering all those numbers and just breaking down walls left and right like he's the Kool-Aid guy running through that wall. I mean, Derrick Henry is an unbelievable bionic human being. He's just killing people. He's trucking people. He doesn't look like he wears down. And as much as I just gassed up Derrick Henry and the Titans, I am taking the Chiefs on the road in Tennessee this week. Now, if you didn't listen to the whole podcast, you missed that, but that's my best bet of the week, and it's early. We'll talk to you tomorrow.